Welcome to On Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host for this journey into issues facing the performing arts. This week, I'll speak with composer Victoria Bond, whose setting of Psalm 84 was recently premiered in a joint performance by the choirs of a Jewish temple and Episcopal church, part of the Psalms Project, commissioned by Soli Deo Gloria. She'll talk about that work, as well as a children's Hanukkah opera that she's currently working on. Music is part and parcel of the holiday season, and this week I'm continuing with my theme of sacred and secular music. Last month, the choirs of Temple Emmanuel and the Cathedral of St. John the Divine in New York came together for, quite possibly, an unprecedented joint performance. The choirs performed two new psalm settings, first at Friday night services at Temple Emmanuel, and then the following Sunday at St. John the Divine. The works were part of the Psalms Project, a series of commissions by Soli Deo Gloria, an organization that promotes the composition of contemporary sacred classical works. The works performed were a setting of Psalm 23, I Will Fear No Evil, by Paul Moravec, and Psalm 84, How Lovely Is Your Dwelling Place, by Victoria Bond. You'll hear more in detail about the Psalms Project next week, but this week we'll start off with my conversation with Bond. She's also been working on a children's Hanukkah opera, commissioned by the Young People's Chorus of New York City, of which you just heard a short excerpt. I met with her recently to speak about her participation in the Psalms Project, the children's opera, and some other pieces she is working on that have their roots in Jewish tradition.
I was asked to be a part of the Psalms Project, and as a composer in this wonderful group of other composers, I was asked if I had any connections to temples in New York. And a friend of mine was a member of Temple Emmanuel, and he put me in touch with Laurie Corson, who's the cantor at Temple Emmanuel. And so I spoke with her. I went to one of her rehearsals and heard the marvelous, marvelous choir sing. And so we talked about it. I hadn't written the piece yet at that point, but I told her what I was planning to do. And then things went on for a while, and she and the Joseph Lo Schiavo, who is the head of Soli Deo Gloria, were in contact. And the next thing I knew was that there was going to be two performances of the psalm, one at Temple Emmanuel and the other at St. John the Divine, and it was going to be a combined choir from both of those places, which was very, very exciting. Two different conductors, two different organists, but the combined choir was going to be performing Friday night at the Temple and Sunday as part of the evensong service at the Cathedral. And in addition to the psalms being performed there, the minister from St. John the Divine spoke at Temple Emmanuel, and Laurie Corson spoke at St. John the Divine. So it was truly an amalgamation, a mixture, a cross-fertilization, as it were, of faith and music from two organizations that I don't think normally cooperate on this in this way. I chose Psalm 84 because of the Brahms Requiem. I'm a singer, or at least I was a singer. And when I was at the University of Southern California in Los Angeles, I was in the chorus when we performed the Brahms Requiem. And I absolutely fell in love with the Requiem, first of all, and then fell in love with Brahms' setting of Psalm 84, and fell in love with the words of Psalm 84, which to me are an environmental psalm. About the beauty of the earth, which is something that Brahms felt very deeply and which I feel very deeply. And so that when I was asked to choose a psalm, that came to mind immediately.
Where do you see your setting of that fitting in with the spirit and the idea behind the Psalms Project?
One of the interesting things, and probably one of the unique things about my particular setting of this psalm, has to do with the translation of it. Because I was looking at the translation, and online you can scroll over the Hebrew words and get multiple English translations for them, because the words evidently are very rich in nuance, and one English word is not enough to translate them. So as I'm looking at these other words that all were translations of the same word, I thought, why not include them all? So that's what I did. I sort of made an amalgam of the translation of these words and set them all.
It's interesting looking at the Psalms as an intersection, I guess, shall we say, between the Jewish liturgical tradition, the Christian liturgical tradition. Symbolically and otherwise, where do you see the Psalms as an opportunity to bring different groups of faith together?
Well, the circumstances of this particular project, I think, perfectly illustrate exactly what you're saying, because being performed in a temple with members of the chorus that were both Jewish and non-Jewish, and being performed at the cathedral by a choir that included a lot of Jewish people and certainly a very large Jewish audience, it really was something that brought people together. The words, I think I forgot to mention one thing about the words, because I did include Hebrew words in the song itself, in the setting of the psalm, and Laurie Corson was extremely helpful in helping me fit the words to particular rhythms. So I think that, I mean, we're always trying to find ways to bring people together of different, who find different avenues to faith. And I think that there's nothing like music to unify people, because music goes beyond words. It goes directly to the emotions and speaks to us so directly, cross-culturally, interfaith, across age, across time. And so it really is the ambassador of, of goodwill, if you will.
Going forward, what type of ensembles, choral groups do you see taking this on and performing it?
As a practical composer, I like my works to be flexible enough to be able to include many different ensembles and many different circumstances. The organ part can be played by piano, for that matter. It could also be done a cappella without an organ. It could be done by a small choir, because there are basically, it doesn't divide, so it could be done by SATB choir of just two on a part, three on a part. It could be done by a large choir. So I think it's very flexible, just like the psalm itself is very flexible, and the interpretation of the meaning of the psalm, you know, can be taken in many, many different ways. I think that's why it appealed so much to Brahms, whose Requiem really was about a feeling of awe for creation rather than a specific religion.
Now, the other piece that you've been working on and that recently had at least a partial premiere is the Hanukkah opera. Tell us about the genesis of that project, which was commissioned by the Young People's Chorus of New York.
Every year I conduct Amal and the Night Visitors with Chamber Opera Chicago. And it's an extraordinary work, and it's a brilliantly written work, and it appeals to children. It's always been a great pleasure to bring this piece to new audiences every year. We usually do two, sometimes three performances of it. And it's so perfectly tailored to a child's perspective, to the attention span of a child, and it brings them so much joy at this time of year. And being Jewish, I thought, you know, we need something like this for Jewish kids. So the story of Hanukkah, you know, there are many aspects to it. There's the war aspect, and there's the, you know, is the story of the lights something that was added later on? Is that really historic? So rather than trying to say this happened or this didn't happen, the story is a contemporary story, and it has to do with a child in a classroom that the class is learning about Hanukkah, and the teacher is teaching the children traditional Hanukkah songs. And it's a multicultural class, which, as you know, having worked with the Young People's Chorus of New York City, is a multicultural group. And so some of the children say, well, why do we have to learn about Hanukkah? We're not Jewish. And the teacher says, there are aspects of Hanukkah that have something to teach all of us, and let me show you. So she, as I say, teaches them a lot of the traditional songs and dances and the dreidel song, and tells them about the customs and the foods. And there's one little boy in class who can't sing. All the other children are singing and having a wonderful time. And this one little boy can't sing. And the kids, as kids will do, make fun of him and they tease him. And he's hurt and he's humiliated. And he has kind of a meltdown moment when they all go to recess, saying, you know, why can't I sing? Where is my voice? He becomes so upset. The children have built a menorah as part of the class project. And he becomes so upset that he accidentally breaks the menorah. And so now he's doubly humiliated because not only can't he sing, but he's destroyed what they've done. So I won't tell you the rest of the story because I want everyone to come to the performance or to hear it next year when the Young People's Chorus performs the work in its entirety with songs and dances and costumes and choreography and all the rest of it. But the miracle is that he gets his voice, and the menorah, which was broken, comes back together again and lights up. So we have a real miracle at the end, which, let me tell you, is very difficult to find. I mean, there are not too many Jewish stories, as there is in Amal, where a little boy throws his crutches away and says, "It's a miracle, I can walk." We don't have miracles like that. But learning, being able to sing after you haven't been able to sing, that's a pretty big miracle, especially for a singing group.
What type of takeaways did you get from working with the students, how particularly the students who, for some of whom this may have been new material subject-wise, how did they react? How did they get into it? How did they relate?
Well, when we did a workshop a couple of years ago, I got a kick out of it because I was riding the bus home after a rehearsal. And I hear a child singing from the back of the bus one of the Hanukkah songs. And I turn around, and it's a little African-American boy. And I thought, wow, this is so great. You know, these children, they don't know any differences. You know, they know a tune that they like, a song that they like, that they remember. And they don't say, oh, I shouldn't be singing this because I'm not Jewish. You know, they just pick up whatever they enjoy singing. And the group, the Young People's Chorus, is multicultural. I mean, there are Hispanics, there are Asians, there are African-Americans, and everything in between, as well as Jewish, Christian, Muslim, you name it, they've got it. And it's wonderful. It brings the kids together, and they don't know anything of prejudice. They just enjoy and participate. So I got a big kick out of, you know, seeing a variety of skin tones and facial characteristics and ethnicities singing Hanukkah songs, because I do think that the message of the holiday has something to give everyone.
As you mentioned, the work will be premiered next year in its entirety. Where do you see it going from there? What types of groups and organizations do you see picking this up and performing it in the future?
I certainly hope so. I know what a huge success Amal and the Night Visitors has been in all kinds of different circumstances, from, you know, school basements to concert halls. And I will make a variety of performing versions of this so that it can be done just with piano accompaniment and can be done with a small ensemble or a larger ensemble. And what I'd love to make it available either in its completion. It's not going to be that long. It'll be about 70 minutes in that neighborhood. And I'd like to make individual songs from it available. So if there's a, you know, a choir that just wants to do a song or two as part of their program, it'll be available that way, in larger chunks or the complete thing. Make it as flexible as possible.
Now, you have done some other works on Jewish themes, Jewish music in the past. Tell us a little bit about how you approach that topic in terms of the material you want to set, and then how you go about setting it and arranging it.
Well, I'd like to tell you about two specific works. One of them was commissioned by the Society for Jewish Music. Hadassah Markson commissioned me to write a work for the Society for Jewish Music. And her father had transcribed the tropes into a book that was used by bar mitzvah and bat mitzvah boys and girls as part of their learning. And as you know, the tropes are little symbols that are a part of the actual letters that indicate musical motifs. Because, of course, the Torah is to be sung, is not to be spoken, it's to be sung. And the tropes indicate to the cantor what the melodies are. So this person transcribed those into musical notation, and she gave me the book, and I studied it and decided that I was going to use the tropes as part of the musical material of these pieces. I called it Sacred Sisters because there are three movements. I wrote it for a harpist and violinist, mother and daughter team. The harpist is Susan Jollis, and her daughter, Renee Jollis, is a violinist. And so I wrote it for the two of them. And so there are these wonderful little melodies, motifs, and I incorporated them into the setting of Esther and the setting of Ruth. The third of the Sacred Sisters, Judith, is part of the Apocrypha, and that does not have its tropes. But having done the other two, I sort of invented trope-like motifs. And I found these motifs to be so inspiring. They were almost like they had a glow, a life of their own. They just they suggested so many musical ideas to me that I decided, I have to do this again, and I have to use these tropes again. So they are now going to be part of my musical DNA, as it were. The other piece that I wanted to tell you about is a piece called Weddings and Bar Mitzvahs, and it's a piece for solo violin. My father used to sing a folk song to me, Hat ein Mann ein Weibele, and the words of it, well, the melody is dum bum ba da di da 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 ba ba da di ba da di da di da dum ba di bum ba da dum bum, typical folk-like melody. The words are pretty awful, so I didn't set the words, because the words are, if a man has a little wife and she doesn't behave, he should take her by the neck and swing her around his head like a chicken. Awful, right? But the melody is lovely, so I thought, I'm going to do a set of variations on this particular melody. And I had pictured a violinist who was going to be playing at at either a wedding or a bar mitzvah, somebody who had been hired to be the entertainment. And this person has very mixed feelings about doing it. I mean, there's one thing about a public ceremony for really what is a very private, intimate moment in your life. And so maybe he's thinking about having broken up with his girlfriend, you know, whatever. I wasn't specific about that. But he goes through many different emotional changes with this melody. And as he is musing on being able to play for this very special event.
Well, how often do you find opportunities to bring music from either the Jewish tradition or Jewish themes into some of your other works when you're composing?
My grandfather was a composer and a conductor, and he wrote a lot of liturgical music. Now, he died before I was born, so I never had a chance to meet him, and I'm still trying to find his music. But his spirit lives in me, and I feel this very strongly. And actually, the first project where I started to explore that in any depth was the piece that was commissioned by the American Society for Jewish Music, Sacred Sisters. And that really got me started. And so there are a lot of other projects that I want to do in the future. Those are the things that I've done in the past. I really want to be able to use this material and the tropes in future works. I have a big oratorio planned, which I shouldn't talk about until I actually get started on it. But come back to me in a year, and I'll let you know if this has gotten off the ground.
Stepping back a bit, just looking at the current situation facing composers in general nowadays, and I've been very interested over the past several months speaking with composers about just generally the challenges you face in bringing your music to life and finding a foothold in having it played, not just once, but then subsequently.
I think one of the big challenges is to write something that people like to perform, number one, because it has to appeal to a performer. It has to be able to give him or her a way to express themselves and have enough of a personal relationship to this material. So it has to be universal enough that it's not just a niche, but it's something that really goes very deep into people's character. I love to write opera. I mean, I started out in the children's chorus of the New York City Opera, where my father was a bass. And so opera was with me from the time that I can remember. And I've written about 5 operas now. And there's something very special about writing a character that somebody says, you know, I understand this person. I really, this is who I am. I've felt this. So I try and hope that my music will have that appeal to people, that they will want to perform it, not just because they're trying to be nice to me or anything like that, but that it really has appeal to them. And then, of course, the audience reaction is, you know, is as a result of a performer feeling very committed to a piece, because when a performer can basically sell a piece to an audience and they get that that feedback from the audience, then it becomes, you know, just a very positive cycle that increases every time a performer brings it to a new audience. I was very encouraged by the reaction both this past week and the week before that to both the psalm setting. And, of course, you know, in a temple and in a church, people don't applaud. But afterwards, I got a lot of very positive feedback from the audience and also from the chorus, which was very, very gratifying, because as a former singer, I like to write things that singers like to sing, you know, that sits well in the voice, and, you know, where you really get a feeling that are enjoying it. It's not a chore. And then with the Young People's Chorus just a few days ago, it also got a wonderful reaction. It was performed at the 92nd Street Y, and it was very gratifying to see that it appealed to so many people.
That was composer Victoria Bond, whose website can be found at victoriabond.com. Next week, you'll hear more about the Psalms Project as I speak with several other participants in the endeavor. Year-round and at the holiday season, our programming keeps your world filled with great classical music. We can only do that with your support. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate Now. Thank you for your support. Thank you for listening to A Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. You can listen to previous shows anytime in our webcast archive at wwfm.org. Join me next week for another look at the news and insight into some of the challenges and trends in the world of the performing arts.